The whole concept of dog training is broken, giving us an incomplete picture of our dogs and their behaviors. So says my guest today, Kim Brophy, in her book, Meet Your Dog, The Game-Changing Guide to Understanding Your Dog's Behavior. How many times have you or someone you know saw that puppy in the window and absolutely fell in love without considering anything more than teaching them not to do their business in the house? Kim is an award-winning certified canine behavior consultant and has developed a comprehensive framework known as LEGS. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you so much for having me.
Give our listeners a little bit of your background and then tell us what LEGS stands for and what brought you to it.
So my background is that I have always been a dog lover since I can remember, growing up in Atlanta at a time in the 70s and early 80s when dogs were still loose in the city. I just was drawn to them from the jump. But a little later on in my life, came to find that I had a personal set of experiences in my life that made me really want to move into dog behavior and advocacy and welfare, in my ability to kind of understand their position of powerlessness as it related to the model of dog obedience training. Mm. And so, and the TED Talk that I just did that came out this last week goes into that story in more detail, so I won't do that here. But so getting into the field of applied ethology and training and behavior to try to introduce a more authentic understanding of dog behavior to the industry, I found myself in the first part of my career in the position of the learn the rules before you break them, right? So I was new, I was in my 20s, and I was trying to just, you know, absorb as much information as I could. And ultimately got increasingly frustrated and discouraged by the lack of integration of other scientific disciplines into the common approaches to addressing, understanding, and solving, quote, behavior problems. Mm-hmm. So I went back to my roots in applied ethology and then started searching across the board in numerous scientific disciplines for answers and had a nice stack of books that were academic from, you know, everything from evolutionary biology to neuroethology to anthropology, psychology, et cetera, all on my bedside table for years as I dove back into all these different fields. And
heavy reading.
Legs is the result. Yeah, exactly. It was. It was daunting because I would try to read them all at one time. Legs was the result of that. Legs was some, you know, 7 years after starting that process, mm-hmm. what the boiled down, concentrated nuts and bolts framework came out to be, where all of these different disciplines were essentially all agreeing, using different terms and everything to talk about it, but all functionally agreeing that all of these things mattered. And so that being LEGS, that's learning, environment, genetics, and self. So the gist of it is that for any organism on Earth, regardless mm-hmm. of what type, from the simplest bacteria to the most complex animals like us humans, every organism is trying to make it in the game of survival mm-hmm. on our planet. So they have to be able to fit perfectly into the environmental conditions as perfectly as possible so that they can function effectively within those conditions. And so they have to be learning on an individual basis about changes in their environment that are occurring constantly. And they have to be able to adapt individually through learning part of it to those changes in the environment and then pass on those lessons through their genetics to subsequent generations. And doing all of this over the course of their individual life as a self, as they're aging, depending on their sexual maturity and reproductive status, their health, etc. And so learning, environment, genetics, and self basically is a way of ensuring that we're not missing any one of the components that is going to influence the behavior and the welfare of not just our dogs, but of any organism.
Well, and I think that's where the real gist of this whole thing is, as you stated, the whole story, the whole thing.
Right.
And as I read through your book, I love it. And I would absolutely recommend this book, Meet Your Dog by Kim Brophy. It seems like as I read through it, I'm listening to your words. I'm going through this thinking, well, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And a lot of it has to do with the expectations that we have about our dog and what our dog may have of us that we don't know.
Mm-hmm. And I love you sharing that because it's really such a common experience that our clients have had for years. And so far, everyone who's read the book has had a very strong, resounding response similar to your own of, well, it just makes so much sense.
Yeah.
It's common sense in a way. And yet, what is it about our cultural perceptions of dogs that has led us to treat them like the exception to these natural laws that we've understood for so long to apply to other species?
Right. Right. And you give a great example when you talk about, would we take a human that has a wanderlust and enjoys adventure and stick them behind a desk?
Mm-hmm. Well, we all know what happens to those people.
Yes.
You know, they end up very unhealthy and unfulfilled. And, you know, we can't make ourselves something that we're not, and they can't either. And same as any other animal. This is why zoologists go out of their way to provide appropriate habitats to various types of animals.
Exactly. And one of the first stories you tell about, and I'm going to ask you to talk about this, is Dexter and Rebecca. Would you share that?
Sure. So it's really just a good symbolic story for this type of situation where we just assume the behavior is bad or needs to be, quote, fixed or, you know, given a Prozac prescription when actually it's some other component of legs that we just simply have missed. And so that was that Dexter was a terrier who was originally raised with his owner on a farm and was able to run loose on this huge farm and, you know, spending his days running around between the barn and the house and the fields and everything else. And half the time his owner probably didn't know what he was doing. But he was free and autonomous to express the natural behaviors and had, right, you know, a life of his own where he could fulfill those things. And so as a terrier, probably spending a lot of time behind the hay bales, hunting small animals, things of that nature. When he moved to Asheville with his owner, because she had some life-changing circumstances, he ended up moving into a house that, unbeknownst to his owner, was infested with rodents, mice. And so a few weeks into living in the new environment, she reported to her veterinarian, who then referred her to us, that he was running voraciously back and forth across the wall, you know, frothing at the mouth, barking, scratching, and she thought he had some light or shadow chasing neurotic behavior. He wouldn't eat anymore. He wasn't sleeping. He had no interest in the ball, just wanted to go outside to relieve himself and then would come back in and repeat the behavior. And whereas in many situations, we're very quickly going to jump to a conclusion and say, well, here it's clearly obsessive compulsive disorder and the dog needs Prozac and, you know, behavior modification. She actually had mice in her walls. And so it was an environmental component and a context that was setting off his genetic software to be a terrier and to voraciously and tenaciously hunt these animals in the wall. And once, of course, she was able to get to the root of the problem and remove the animals humanely from her home environment, then his behavior resolved back to a more normal level, even though she did have to work much harder without the farm environment to meet his natural needs as a terrier to express certain behaviors.
And I love that story because it, like you said, it is symbolic of the book, really, of what we can think of and how to react with our dogs and interact with our dogs. And it was interesting. And as I was going through the book, you also have, you break down 10 categories of dogs. And one of the dogs is gun dogs. And I had a golden retriever and got her as a rescue. So we weren't really sure what her life was like. But I remember we had 5 acres, so she had a place to run and just enjoyed that. But we also lived on a busy road.
Mm-hmm.
And she had gone out, and I looked onto the road, and here's my dog, and trucks are stopping. And I run out there screaming at her, grab her, I'm pulling her back, and I smacked her on the butt, and then I'm crying, oh my God, don't you ever do that again. And she never did. But it's like, what did that poor dog think when I'm out there like a raving lunatic, you know? But she didn't do it again. But the thing is, the one thing that was so special is that she was able to do those things. She, unfortunately, we had to put her down, but she had that life. And the experience with dogs, being able to have that interaction and realize there's another part of your book where you talk about the family dynamic and how we all have to kind of live together, get along somehow and figure out how we do that. And that's what your book, Meet Your Dog by Kim Brophy, does. And I want to get off of what I'm talking about and get into more of your book. How did you broke up these categories? What was the driving force of the different categories? How did you decide what they are? I know there's some pretty simple ones like sound and sight and that sort of thing. But you also have like a natural dog and a world dog. Can you explain those, expound on those just a little bit more?
Sure. And so essentially, you know, the ACC has had a decent categorizing system in many regards for years, where we're breaking out herding dogs and, you know, the terriers and the hounds. But there are there's I guess one large exception of the quote non-sporting group, which was the catch-all for all these other types of dogs. And so what I did was I broke the dogs up into their jobs, and really, if you want to look at this from a fancier scientific perspective, it's a phylogenetic model. And what phylogenetics does is, when it's looking at breaking dogs into these groups or clades, it's looking not just at the DNA, but also at the phenotype of the animal, meaning everything from the morphology, the physical characteristics of the animals and shared traits, and then also the behavior of those animals in relationship to their environment. So it's a more comprehensive way of looking at evolutionary trees of different species or groups. And so if you look at the 10 groups, you're looking at basically what were their professions, right? So these dogs were bred for very specific, distinct jobs. And even within each group, there's even more specializations. But these are at least putting them into the framework of what was the core job that dog had to do. In other words, what was its niche? Even though they didn't evolve naturally, even though these dogs were, of course, selected by humans, and so you have some, you know, obviously not natural selection in there, but, you know, the pressure of our choosing what behaviors we wanted, then it's still appropriate to say that there's niches. And I think that's one of the points in the book that to me is so critical, is where I felt legs had to be brought out into the world and given to dog owners was that my field, the world of training and behavior, is very L heavy. It's all how you raise them is kind of this mantra. And that if you just do everything right and you find the right technique, and even trainers endorse this idea, oh, my training method is perfect. It will work on any dog. I guarantee results. If you just use the right training method, you can, you know, make your dog whatever you'd want them. And we are all kind of collectively ignoring the E and the G. And in nature, the E and the G, the environment and genetics, and the relationship between those two is critical. They have to work together. They have to work harmoniously. So when we've bred dogs for hundreds or thousands of years to genetically be something very specific because of a very detailed need context in an environment, and then all of a sudden we ignore that relationship, we paint them all the same as, quote, our pets, and we have the same global expectations of them as, quote, our pets, thinking that the L and the S will be everything if we just give them all the right medical care, the right food, the right health, and then we do the right training, the E and the G won't matter, is what's creating the rub that's so often responsible for so many failed situations between people and their dogs.
And that is why it is so important to know, and before you get a dog, consider the breed. you know? And that's another thing where this book is so important, folks. I mean it. My husband's looking at me, are you still reading that book? Yes, I'm still reading that book. because it's just absolutely loaded with information, and information that just really, really makes a lot of sense. As we follow what dogs do, as they have these jobs, there's something else that you had mentioned too in their DNA. You mentioned this epigenetic tags.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that?
Yes, and I will say that's something I found later in my research, because the field of epigenetics is relatively young, but in a nutshell, your genes are learning too. And it makes so much sense when you think about it, because actually, how would evolution happen without that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if every generation had to learn the same lessons that the last generation did, nothing was modified, you know, it wouldn't be a very efficient process. And so big lessons, important lessons related to survival, particularly if it's related to, you know, something that can kill you, something very dangerous. So, you know, when trauma is activated or the animal is triggered into the fight or flight response, then it activates the hippocampus of the brain, which of course is going to, you know, store your long-term memories for that really important lesson that you need to carry on forward. But we also know now that those experiences actually leave epigenetic tags on the DNA of the individual, and that information then gets passed on to subsequent generations. And the analogy I use in the book is, think of it like the user manual that's constantly being updated by every generation for subsequent generations, so that their success is furthered going forward.
Yeah, it's great. Kim Brophy, the book is Meet Your Dog. And I also want to briefly talk on, we're running out of time, unfortunately, but briefly touch on, okay, I know a lot of folks that really love rescue dogs, and that's their passion, is to get a rescue dog rather than breeders and that type of thing. So those dogs have a little bit different sense of things. Where would you put those dogs?
So I could not be a bigger advocate for rescuing. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that I am the biggest advocate for rescuing, and the whole idea of dogs being products probably needs to be further examined, and that's a whole nother conversation you and I can have another day.
Okay.
But what I will say is that genetics still matter, but mm-hmm. you just want to know how watered down they are. Honestly, mm-hmm. if you can't tell that there is a primary influencer of a genetic group, one of these 10, then nature's gotten back in there and is doing its wonderful magic. And the more mixed up, honestly, the more adaptive, the healthier that animal is likely to be, and the more flexible behaviorally the animal is likely to be, mm-hmm. of course, depending on all of the pieces of his legs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to know if there's a strong influencer of a genetic group, you can use the app described in the book, thedogkey.com, or you can get a traditional genetic test, and then you can find out if you have a strong influencer, because just because it's half Border Collie and half Labrador doesn't mean it's neither Border Collie or Labrador. It means you have a mix of both. And so it's good to be aware what the traits are if you do have a strong influencer in there. But again, the more mixed up, the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and I have to say too, I want to let folks know that the book is wonderful. I love how the chapters are set up for the 10 categories of what you'll love, what'll be challenging, and other very helpful information. If anybody is looking, and even if you're a dog owner and you're wondering, why is my dog... Get this book. It's called Meet Your Dog, The Game-Changing Guide to Understanding Your Dog's Behavior. And I think it's going to help immensely. I really do. Bottom line, Kim, what's next for you?
Well, honestly, this has been a lifelong mission so far, and I think it's going to continue to be. We are trying to create an army of passionate individuals that are ready to redefine some significant terms as it relates to our dogs, from the whole concept of them being a pet to redefining standards of practice for everything from dog training to animal shelters to doggy daycares. We should demand more. It's time to raise the level of conversation. It's time to challenge old paradigms that we have and to move forward with dog legs.
All right. Oh, well, Kim, thank you so much for your time. I will have all the links to you, your book, the links to the TED Talk as well, and put that all on our website after the show airs. And I hope I get a chance to talk to you again.
Great. Thank you. You too. All right.